If weight management is one of your New Year goals, Quiksilver Scientific's GLP-1 Amplifier can help. This science-backed formula supports metabolic balance, curbs cravings, and promotes healthy blood sugar levels, making it easier to stay consistent and in control. It helps give your body the boost it needs to keep you on track. Feel confident and energized this year with Quiksilver Scientific's GLP-1 Amplifier. Get 10% off and free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. Again, that's tryqs.com/podcast for 10% off and free shipping. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
What a time to be alive as a Bravo fan, truly. Like, is anybody else kind of overwhelmed, but in a good way? We have The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, Miami, Beverly Hills, and Potomac on. We have Southern Charm and Southern Hospitality and Married to Medicine. We have the second season of The Traitors in full swing, which is absolutely perfect television that you need to be watching on Peacock. And then we have Vanderpump Rules coming at the end of the month and Summer House on deck in February. To quote Lisa, bar legend, I love that. And speaking of Vanderpump Rules, I'm hosting a watch party for the premiere in New York City on Tuesday, January 30th. So come watch with me. Don't watch the next day on Peacock. Come watch it live with me in New York. The event is at 310 Bowery, which is where my friend and co-host Megan threw watch parties for last season's finale and reunion episodes. They totally sold out. They were super fun. It's right in the East Village, and tickets cover a free drink and three raffle tickets to enter into giveaways for prizes like Send It to Daryl merch, Ariana's cocktail book, Vanderpump Rosé, and some other stuff. We'll have a step and repeat. It's going to be fun. We're serving pumptinis and goat cheese balls. And I just think it's always so fun to get together with fellow Bravoholics, whether it's like BravoCon or a watch party like this or other events. Like, even if you don't even have somebody to come with, I guarantee you'll be in absolute heaven and you'll make fast friends with everybody else there, because when we all get together, like, we speak the same language and create the safe space to talk all things Bravo without any judgment. Totally welcome to talk all the things, and it's the best hobby you can have. So I'll drop the links to get tickets in the show notes of this episode, but you can also find them on my Instagram and link in bio, all the things. But please come watch with me. It's going to be super fun, and if we get a good turnout, we will keep doing this throughout the year, because again, I love the idea of bringing us all together IRL to watch our favorite shows. Two other quick notes. I also guest co-hosted on two different Bravo-related podcasts this week. I'm on today's episode of the Comments by Celebs podcast, talking all things Bravo with my friend Isabel, as well as the new episode of the Real Moms of Bravo podcast with my friend Abby. So go check those out as well. Anyway, to help me dissect the first three episodes of The Traitors, the latest on Beverly Hills and Salt Lake, I invited on Ryan Bailey, who co-hosts the uber popular daily pop culture podcast. I don't know how he does it. It is called So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey. He's one of my favorite people to converse with in this Bravo adjacent world that we are a part of. And he always just brings like some new hilarious perspective to the issues at hand. And he's just one of my favorites. So you guys will definitely enjoy this episode today. Keep listening for my lengthy chat with Ryan, but please also make sure to drop us a 5-star rating or a positive review. We're almost at 100 ratings, and I've loved seeing all the kind words you guys have given to the still new podcast in the reviews. So I'd love if you could help me out and contribute to us continuing to build Gabbing with Gib. Enjoy today's episode and have a great weekend. I want to gab. Okay, so today we're gabbing with Ryan Bailey, the host and creator of So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey, an incredible daily pop culture podcast that tackles everything from Bravo to the latest hit streaming shows to Taylor Swift and beyond. I've been lucky enough to be on it a couple times. I'm so excited to have Ryan on Gabbing with Gib today. Ryan, you're one of the best in the biz. How's it going?
What up, Gabber Nation? What do we call the people? Like, is it the Gabbers?
We're working on it. We do.
Yeah, Gabber right. Nation or Gib. I was trying
to
think of
there.
What the name
it's close. We're close.
That feels so very close. But by the way, everybody that listens to this knows that Gibson is the best. Like, he truly is. It's one of those things that you have a conversation with Gibson and it travels down from his social media to his conversation. And you are one of those people that I've always looked up to in the industry. And I will always take notes on how to interview, or you're so concise with your thoughts in the written word as well. And I even just subscribed to your Substack last month and I've been blown away. It's been so great. Sorry to kiss your butt at the top.
No,
cut all of this out.
Let's go for an hour. I'm good. No, that's really nice of you. And And Ryan, the last time we were together in person was at a P.F. Chang's on the Las Vegas Strip, the last day of BravoCon.
The magic of a P.F. Chang's.
You, me, Dylan Hafer, and Sarah Galley just having some noodles.
I said that was the perfect way to end BravoCon for me, though. It was like this kind of nice rehash of the weekend, the crazy weekend events, and
totally
that it was
agree.
Nice to not have Bravo celebrities around us and just kind of recap the weekend. That was actually one of my favorite moments.
No, we let our guard down at that dinner. I think we were just like, all right, we're good. We're hiding out in the back, in the, literally the back table at this restaurant. Yeah, so that was last time we saw each other. You know, I feel like since then, you know, the year ended with like all of these shows airing and premiering around BravoCon. And then we took a break at the holidays for like a couple weeks. But then I feel like this year has just been like roaring back. It's like I'm kind of back to the like I'm tiptoeing into the overwhelmed territory again with all of our shows. How are you feeling with that with the start of the year?
I'm exhausted. Like, I feel like it has been nonstop, and that's the best problem to have.
Yeah.
But it's also one of those things that you get really prideful. Like, I have nothing to do with Bravo, but I'm so prideful of it. Like, I love that it is part of the national conversation. I love that Salt Lake City had the season that it did.
Same.
Southern Charm was one of the most really such an amazing reunion part one to watch. There are so like gems, even like the success of the Traitors on Peacock. Like, it, you know, we got the ratings said it was 75% up than last year's ratings.
Wow.
And that stuff makes me so proud, but it is one of those things that you're like, the personal life completely taken a hit, watching narrative storytelling is taking a hit. Like, we're supposedly in Oscar season. So it's weird. It can be a full-time job watching Bravo itself right now.
I know. And then keeping up with all the announcements and the trailers. And I mean, we got the Summer House trailer. We just got that. We were talking before we started. The Valley trailer, which is the Vanderpump Rules spinoff, which clearly was intended to feature more of the couples with the OGs, I believe, who had purchased houses and moved to the Valley. Now it's just kind of like the Jackson, Brittany and Kristen show, which I'm not sure we needed that. Where are you landing on the Valley? We're obviously all going to give it a chance to some degree, but where are you landing on it right now?
Well, see, I'm cautiously optimistic. Now,
okay.
the thing with second screen technology where Bravo, you know, it kind of depends on us, the audience.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things you have to get past that first wave of negativity. Like, so online, like, oh my God, what is this? Oh, over my dead body, I'll be watching this. And I'm like, no, we'll all be watching this. It's all going to come down to relationships and story. And that trailer did not give us any of that. It didn't give any actual footage they filmed.
Right.
It was kind of a joke thing of Jax driving a, you know, a kid's car around the Valley, looking like a serial killer and, you know,
giving adulthood a try. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Say, like, what is it? Somebody ran like he's 44 years old. He should be on his
he
third
has a child.
Adulthood.
Yes.
Yeah, but so like, listen, if the show is good, if those relationships are solid, we're all going to keep tuning in, but the trailer doesn't give us any hint of that. I think we sometimes have to step away from the immediately crapping on something before we see it, because we've been wrong as an audience so many times. Just take Salt Lake City, for example.
Totally.
We all went into this season thinking, myself included, thinking this is going to be trash. There's no way this is going to be good. And it turned out to be their most solid season of the four seasons.
Yeah, no, you're so right. And I think I agree. I want to see the actual footage and we're going to give it a chance. We're going to give it a chance. But for me, it's just sort of like having Jax as an anchor of a show is not necessarily the most appealing idea, but
then,
you know,
I
like Kristen's energy and I do like Brittany.
Kristen has really kind of done a really nice 180 in terms
yes.
of the fandom appreciating her. I think she's realized certain mistakes she's made, and she's been like a fascinating puzzle piece in terms of how to approach Scandoval as well, having dated Sandoval. But the thing with Jax is, and what I always question is, you know, is it worth potentially ruining your great family that you're so proud of to be on television again? Because which Jax are we going to get? Jax always does this thing where he's like, well, I'm playing a character. I was mm-hmm. the bad guy. And it's like, no, man, that was you. But you just don't want to admit it's you. So are we going to get character Jax? Are we going to get real Jax? Whether we like it or not, it seems like they are hinging the show on Jax. And that's
totally.
A big thing to put on his shoulders. And you already can see that obviously it's going to be in the spring. So it's going to be on one of the tail end of the Vanderpump mm-hmm. Rules episodes where they'll have a connector scene like they did with
so
Beverly
true.
Hills. You know, with Sheena being that connector from Brandy. And now we're going to probably have either Sandoval or Sheena being that connector with Jax, where you'll see the end of Vanderpump Rules. And then it'll like Jax will drive over into the Valley and we're in an episode of the Valley.
So true. You know what I hope it is? I hope it's a play date with all the kids. And we follow Sheena to the play date And then we leave with Jackson Brittany. That's what I hope. And we drive back. Yes. That'd be fun. Yeah.
That's it. And then they're just trying to knock on Stassi's door, but she won't answer.
And she will
they're
not.
Like, please come out, Stassi.
Yeah. She's in Italy. Yeah. It's like, oh my God. Yeah. So I watched House of Villains and Jax was on that very briefly. And you could tell that he was trying to, play the cleaned up image. And I think that he wants to be that. I just don't know if that's genuinely what he'll maybe ever be. I think that maybe that is compelling TV, but I listened to him on Heidi and Spencer from the Hills have a podcast and he was just on it.
Yeah.
And he kind of was saying the same things that you just said of like, this is the business I'm in. It's not great for my relationship or my family. He even said like, they opened that bar and he was like, no married man who's ever had a bar, their marriages have never lasted. And then he's like, well, I just started a bar. And I'm like, dude, like he can't even get in his own way, out of his own way,
Well, I like that also, this is the business I'm in. I love that there's a potential, because reality shows are still fairly new as a format over the last 3 decades, is that this is a family business now for other people. like Jax's son, like we raised you to be in the family business, son. Like it is going to be interesting. That's my overall question all the time is where do all these reality show stars go? Like we have to take care of 40 new bachelor bachelorette contestants every year. We have to worry about past Vanderpump Rules cast members. We have to worry about housewives trying to get back on their franchises. And that becomes like a whole cottage industry itself of people complain about reality television, but then why does everybody want to come back? It becomes their full-time job. And that's the part that I find like somebody needs to make a documentary on this someday, because I feel like reality television does something to these people's minds where it completely shifts them from real people to wanting to chase this pseudo celebrity in a sense.
Yeah. Pseudo celebrity. And it's sort of like, I guess, the show is a central vehicle. They can clearly maintain careers outside of it, but it's not that it doesn't have the heft anymore. And so it's this constant game of getting back on. Yeah. It's almost like there should be a show about people trying to get back on their shows as well. It's like,
God, wouldn't that be amazing?
I mean, it would be.
Some people have amazing, Tamara, very successful at getting back on her show, being able to use that interim. You can tell, Freddie or Teddy Mellencamp is, I call her Freddie. Sorry. You can tell, even though she says she doesn't want it, you can tell she wants it.
Oh, my God. She's frothy at the mouth. Yeah, exactly.
That's the thing is they try to play it cool. Even the ones that try to play it cool, there seems to be this quiet desperation with it. Mm-hmm. And then, Gibson, this is where we have to worry. They all then spill over into podcasting. Podcasting is becoming like a Bravo in itself.
It's the audition. Yeah, exactly. It's the audition level.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So one place for them to go are these kind of increasing number of spin-off mashup reality shows where we have contestants from all these different shows coming together. The Traitors we mentioned is the second season just came out. The first 3 episodes is kind of all I can think about right now. I know that Salt Lake is having like its moment, but those first 3 episodes of The Traitors just felt so perfect. And, we knew the cast was like epic and had all these legends on it, but you never know until you see if it's really going to kind of live up to that potential, but it is living up to that potential so far. Is it the same for you? Is it sort of like top of mind?
Yeah, it's such a breath of fresh air.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that, they did such a great job with the casting in this is so dead on with contestants from The Bachelor, Survivor, all of our Bravo shows, somebody from
Big
like
Brother.
Parliament, for God's sake.
Yeah, so what?
Just that way. But then Alan Cumming also commits so hard as a host. He commits and it works. And then the challenge, it's kind of a blend of so many great shows. And you could also point to House of Villains, but House of Villains also has a tabloid gloss to it.
Yes.
And there's a cheesiness to it. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but The Traitors takes itself so seriously and it should. And you have these, what I like about Ultimate Girls Trip, you get to see these characters from a different light. You almost get to appreciate Larsa from a different light.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Avenging Marcus Jordan's death and she comes to life and all, the Phaedra of it all. You get to appreciate these great characters in a different light. But yeah, and the frustrating thing is that Peacock really learned from last season where they dumped it all at once, kind of. Mm-hmm. And now they did the first 3 episodes, give you a little taste, and now they are going to have 1 episode per week up until March. And that to me, I was like, wow, because I've really been thinking about it all week.
I know, and it's going to be kind of an insatiable appetite for it. But I think it's going to make the finale of this show that much more epic. And I think that what's cool about it is that this season in particular has like, they literally have the single legends from Survivor, from Big Brother, from The Challenge, some Real Housewives legends. Like they're kind of the giants in each of their fandoms. So there's something for all these fandoms. They're all going to watch because they all want to see what Parvati from Survivor is doing. They all want to see what Janelle from Big Brother is doing. We all want to see what Tamra and whoever are doing. So it's sort of like, it's feeding all of us and it's kind of exposing all of these new characters to people, which is really exciting. And I'm like so proud of our Bravo ladies for how they're doing. They're holding it down.
I mean, MJ's killing it.
MJ's being a great detective so far. Larsa is kind of steering the faithful ship in a lot of ways. Tamra's like questioning that guy's asthma, which was hilarious. And then spoiler alert, but Phaedra is an incredible pick for a traitor. You know, we had to have a housewife and she is this, I bet you like kind of in that situation, she's incredibly hard to read because her delivery is so unique. She kind of injects everything with a little bit of like the Southern Belle humor. She's kind of a hard person to question, you know? And it's really interesting with Larsa also because you sort of mentioned this, but you know, on Miami, she's having this season where she fucked up big time by sharing Gertie's breast cancer diagnosis, even though she asked her not to. And she hasn't apologized in sort of a real way for it. But then, so she's having this sort of like downward slope on Miami, but then on the Traitors, it's going the opposite direction for her. She is having this sort of redemption arc at the same time. And it's because she's really compelling on this show, like really genuinely. And it's just a really interesting kind of thing to have both these shows on involving her, but completely different kind of takeaways around her.
These shows give these people a second life. And I think that's why they're really important. If they're done well, and that's why I think The Traitors right out of the gate has been a hit. And I'm so excited that people are loving it as much because I think that's just a boon to everybody involved. And then it gets the audience excited about, like, I've been thinking all week about who you would cast on further seasons of The Traitors. It's fun.
It feeds itself.
I was even thinking like, oh my God, I would love to see like Meredith Marks. I would love to see because Meredith Marks is another one that's like always clocking everything. Will
I
never
said the same
defeat.
Thing. She puts her lawyer and hat on and we love it.
Oh,
you know?
Oh man, these reunions, you cannot pin Meredith down. She's like, that's not what I said, Andy. That's not what I said at all. This is what I exactly. And I love that about Meredith, but it's this common thread of like really successful housewives. They will never admit defeat. They will never admit they're wrong. And it becomes, you know, legal in a sense.
Yeah. And the thing on The Traitors is that like everybody, every single episode is usually wrong. They're all reading into these like little signs that mean nothing, but they think they mean something. And it's kind of every round table. It's like, well, you smiled when I said XYZ and it means nothing. It just means
Trishelle
that, like,
got in so much trouble about
Peppermint.
Taking a moment with Peppermint and you know, like taking this moment. And that's the thing is that you know, it almost benefits you to be quiet, to hold back and not throw yourself out there. And I do wonder if some of those people, the faithfuls, if they like, I wonder if Tamra gets insecure on these shows of like, am I a good enough detective? Like they're all trying to out detective each other. And I wonder if there is this kind of insecurity as a reality show person.
There
when
must
you
be.
Get in a group of other people of like, damn, that person's really popping.
Really popping. And also, as I said, they're all sort of like legends in their own spaces, but you know, Tamra's not necessarily watching Big Brother or, you know, Parvati's not necessarily a housewives person. So it's like these people are giants in their spaces and they expect to walk into a room and have people be like, oh my God, that is Sheree Whitfield. And like, meanwhile, like none of them know who she is. It's a kind of like a humbling thing in some respects for some of them. You know what I mean? Because they can all
go toe-to-toe. By the way, is Sheree okay? Sheree is not talking at all.
We've heard nothing from her except when Peppermint got banished. She's like, I am not happy right now.
I was like, Sheree's here? I didn't even know Sheree
right,
was here.
She's getting
like,
no confessional. She usually gives great confessional. I'm surprised about that.
No, and also a Bravo, but if you put a Bravo fan on that show with this cast members, we would immediately be like, guys, look at Phaedra. It's obvious. Like Phaedra
totally.
Is the, like, we know their ins and outs. And I find that interesting. And one of the strengths of it is that they don't know the Bravo celebrity of it all.
I know. The last thing I'll say about The Traitors is like, I was kind of upset that Marcus got murdered so early because I was excited to like see less him and Larsa, but it's more him like kind of operating on his own. Cause you can't really play The Traitors as like a couple. I don't think like, I think that they kind of would have had to separate themselves a little bit. And like, I think he's a great guy. And like, I was just upset that we didn't get more time to sort of like see a new side to him outside of just like couple scenes with Larsa on Miami. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It is interesting. And their relationship is so hard for me to figure out. Like, I mean, they really do seem obviously equally obsessed with each other. And also just the commitment to decide that you want to be a reality show couple. That's the thing I keep going over, is that there must have been a conversation where they're like, we are so all in this relationship that we are going to take our relationship and make it for public consumption. And obviously the blueprint is Heidi and Spencer. But that's my thought of like, and also just the thinking of Michael Jordan at the end of the day of like, it's already bad that you're with Larsa Pippen. You know, like, but now you're actually going to be on multiple TV shows, podcasts. And that's the thing of, you know, and I also like that Marcus was like, listen, it's they must have saw me as the biggest threat here. And I like that he was kind of tickled by that.
Yeah,
you're right. I would love to know Marcus a little bit more.
Definitely. All right. So excited for the traders. Do you have anybody that you have your eye on that like isn't as obvious that you're kind of low key impressed by?
Low key impressed by. I don't know. Like, MJ, genuinely, I like, MJ was somebody that I thought might have been like Reza last season out immediately. But I like, and also if you think about MJ or had conversations with her or watched her on the show, you're like, okay, that actually does fit. I'm more curious about watching more episodes to see how CT steps up,
yeah,
or to see how those other characters, or really what makes Parvati so amazing. I want to see that more in play, her and Sandra, that survivor relationship, because I have a feeling Sandra is going to try to get Parvati out pretty quickly. So
yeah,
I'm just curious how it all shakes out. And I like that I don't know. I really don't know.
Me too. Okay, so let's swing over to Beverly Hills. We got a really interesting, you know, the season is...
Wow, did you say interesting? Because I don't think that describes these shows at all for Beverly Hills. Are you talking about esophaguses?
Yeah. you know, this season of Beverly Hills was supposed to be kind of about Kyle and Mauricio. And it really hasn't been about that in a lot of ways. Like we've gotten moments where it's kind of in the spotlight, but Mauricio and Kyle went to the Homeless Not Toothless gala together on this episode. And the part that I found interesting was the car ride, when we're seeing like this relationship, which to so many people was like the picture perfect, kind of like on a pedestal dream relationship for so many people for over a decade. And in that car ride, it just felt like a different, like we were looking at a different relationship. It was completely flipped on its head. They didn't know what to say to each other. It was like a weird, awkward vibe. What's your latest on Mauricio and Kyle and what we've seen? Because it makes me feel like sad. It's weird.
Yeah, no, there's definitely a sadness to it. And that car ride, you're right, is exactly, it's like an ice storm. It's like you can feel the cold, like it's freezing in there. And Kyle is so checked out. Mm-hmm. You can just tell, like, because he's like, hey, Love Bean, where are you going? This is crazy tonight. What's going on, Love Bean? You know, like, and she's just like talking to somebody she doesn't want to be talking to. And we can pick up on that because we've seen them over 13 seasons. And if you compare that, and I'm not making any assumptions, but if you compare her excitement around Morgan Wade to how she is Mauricio, and also, you know, listen, they've given us context. We know why Kyle is where she's at right now with the loss of her friend, Kathy Hilton, of it all of this stuff. We see all the reasoning. And I think it's really interesting because Kyle also is a real hot potato in terms of trying to get the storyline off her, even though the storyline is about her. So we get then these storylines about esophaguses and Crystal trying to step up to Anna Marie. And when the storyline that we all want to see is, let's zoom in on this, like, what is going on here? Because we all see it, other people are starting to pick up on it, and I think that's the really fascinating sad thing, which reality television can do so well, is when we're so invested in these characters over multiple seasons, we know, we just want to stop pussyfooting around. And there's something with Kyle being on the show for so long. You know, it's like she knew they were having issues going into this season. She's been on record saying that. She didn't know how to do it. She doesn't have a good poker face, she says. And we see that. We can see her being uncomfortable about a camera on them all of a sudden. And that's the stuff I want to zoom in on, because to me, that's like, that's real. That's like, we can sense as an audience when it's real. And
totally.
Like you said, you get sad. You get like, it kind of gives you goosebumps. It's a really weird season. It's disjointed in so many ways because whereas Salt Lake City has this mystery through line, Kyle and Mauricio, like you said, this should be the through line, but we keep getting like all these jagged, like course correcting things that they're trying to focus on instead of what we know we should focus on.
Totally. And it's a change also for Beverly Hills, because it's been such a one issue show every season, you know, for the past like 4 or 5 years. It's like, this is what the season is about. And this is what pretty much every episode is going to tie back to. But you're right. This season, it's like, Kyle doesn't want it to be all about her, because we, at least at the beginning, you kind of sense that you, there was this chance of saving it. I don't really feel like there's a chance to save it. It just feels like there, it's too far gone, or it's kind of just dark vibes in their marriage right now. But she's pushing the spotlight off herself. And, you know, I just don't know where it's going. They picked cameras back up at, you know, at the end of filming when the news came out. So I'm like, what more is there for us to see? Because it feels like it's pretty stagnant. I don't know.
Well, if we were to see real conversations admitting what was truly going on, because my, you know, and I think Kyle, actually, I was at this Variety Women in Reality Television dinner.
Oh, awesome.
Where Kyle spoke, and Kate Arthur, the brilliant Kate Arthur, was doing this interview, and she came out with like, I knew going into the season that we were not in a good place. So she knew going in. Mm-hmm. My theory is that this was already separated by the time filming was started. And that's why Mauricio is always away. That's why he isn't there to support. And I feel like it's that thing of feeling out how we work without each other. And unfortunately, people don't realize this isn't 24-hour-a-day filming. Like, there are days, weeks in between filming where they're probably trying to figure out their real lives. And then Kyle, on top of that, being a producing brain at this point, is trying to figure out, well, I want to share, but I don't want to share everything. I don't want to share. And trying to like edit this thing in her mind to protect mm-hmm. her kids, to protect all of these things. And I think sometimes that's what the audience will get frustrated with, because sure. we feel like we're a part of her family at this point, and we need to know. And that's a silly way to look at it, but that's how this parasocial relationship works with reality yeah. television.
And she has to understand that better than anybody. You know, it's just, this is her first time really, I mean, I guess she's had the spotlight on it in her intense way in terms of her sisters, but it's the first time that like her marriage is really there's a yeah. chance it's not going to survive. And there's a lot to say about it. And there's a lot to say about, a lot of people like to speculate about her other friendships
well,
and Gibson, things. So it's sort
well,
of
that's
like
the thing. Kyle knows at this point, like, I know she's frustrated potentially about Morgan Wade coverage, but at the same time, you've courted it at the same time. So
totally.
That's the confusing thing.
It's
of
a
like,
push and pull.
Well, don't you understand the audience is going to think this if the music video that you did, the song lyrics that you did, the giddiness that you did,
traveling
like
together.
All,
yes, exactly.
Yes, like all, but by the way, like you're putting all of these things out for speculation mm-hmm. so that push pull that she gives the audience and then to be frustrated. I truly wonder, is she truly frustrated? Is this like, it almost makes me think of like Andy Kaufman in a sense. Is this performance art? Like how far ahead are you going in your theory of our consumption of your relationships? How thought out is this? And I don't know, that's the part that
right.
I'm really curious about. And that's because I don't want to ever offend Kyle, but at the same time
no.
I'm like, yo, you have to realize we would think this way, we would start to question these things,
right? And it's one of those things where it's like, maybe it's just being a reality star is so intrinsic into her DNA at this point that it's like,
yes,
most reality stars can't help themselves in terms of putting themselves out there, wanting the attention, wanting the press coverage, wanting XYZ. That just kind of comes with the territory. It's kind of the personality type, I think, that works best on these shows. And she's been around it for 13 years now. So, you know, she knows the game. So I'm just so curious, like sort of what she's really going for and what the end post is. I don't know.
But then we get storylines then like, you know, our fourth or fifth episode with esophagus issues where
oh
it's like,
God.
It almost makes you look back and go, you know, Lucy Applejuice wasn't that bad of a season.
You're it like, was not like, right. Exactly.
Oh, I long for the days of fighting over dogs
oh
and Radar Online when I'm like, how is this? Like, and also Anne-Marie Wiley. I mean, at this point, I think we can say a solidified flop in a lot of ways
yes.
because it seems like
always.
Bad improvisation where all these ladies are looking for that storyline. So once we get on the esophagus, they're all like, ooh, that's something. And I almost feel like, did the producers lead them in the wrong direction thinking that this was interesting? Because every time it gets brought up now, and you're leaving Anne-Marie Wiley hanging out to dry where I
oh
think she thinks she's really doing something.
You're right. During filming, you know that she thought that it was, she
oh,
was like,
fire.
All right,
I'm on fire.
Oh, I've got my fucking storyline. I'm in it. Blah blah blah. I'm going after Crystal and Sutton. Like it's happening. Yeah. Let's fucking go. And it's completely the opposite. It's one of the worst storylines we've had in a very long time. And my only thing that I like about it is that it got Crystal activated in a real way for the first time in a while. That's the only thing that I like about it.
Well, and what did you think about Crystal calling her saying bitch, saying like, you know, you're such a bitch. And what did you think of that? Because we finally got Crystal to really get activated in
yeah.
the Lindsay Hubbard way. But what did you think of that moment?
I liked it because I thought that like, you know, I actually really like Crystal. I think she's like a really amazing person, but I think on the show, she we see a really buttoned up version of herself, and for her to like let that fly kind of in the moment, maybe she'd had a cocktail or two. Like, I found that refreshing because it's a slight crack in the like hyper control that I think that we get from her a lot, which I understand, but I wouldn't necessarily call it a mistake. These women call each other bitches all the time, but it's like, it's not something, I don't think it's something we would have seen her do even.
Yeah. It's shocking coming from Crystal. She's always so neutral, where you'll have like neutral, great, neutral, bad. And she's neutral, neutral. And I always call her a reliable narrator, where I'm like, if it comes from Crystal, I can usually trust it. And that's what's exciting, because she's also the voice of the audience in some ways. So Anna Marie comes off, whether she knows it or not, there's a bully element to her. And so when she thinks she's like, wow, I'm really coming down on this esophagus, I think even the audience was starting to be like, yo, B-I-T-C-H, what's up? And so for Crystal to do that, I think it really shows like, listen, this isn't working. It's going too far. And you need somebody like Crystal to have that moment. And then it kind of activates us, obviously, into the next episode when they're in Spain, where this fight continues. So I'm like, okay, so even the esophagus, maybe we can make some good out of this.
It can lead to some
good interaction.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It sort of opened up the crack in that relationship that we were always going to get, maybe. And like, because they don't seem like people that would necessarily mesh. And you know, it's really interesting to me that Anna Marie, she accuses Crystal of saying, you're using me to be relevant. She did the exact same thing to Dr. Nicole in an interview with Page Six like 2 weeks ago, when Dr. Nicole released that video responding to the whole esophagus thing. And I'm like, again, she thinks that she's doing something that's really sort of fresh and new, and I'm just sort of like, you're rehashing the same insult, you know, and you're in your first season, halfway through your first season. So I mean, I don't know if she has it.
And also to be proud of your husband calling you an 8.5 in every category.
That was tough.
To lean into that is so, and by the way, that's the stuff that I find fascinating about her, of like, well, what's that all about? That you're actually being like gaslit every day of your life into an 8.5 area that I think is fascinating, but she's so confident in everything that she does. That's the stuff you kind of want to zoom in on. And I don't think we'll get there. And I truly think, you know, I used to think, and I still do to a degree, that anybody that gets hired on a housewife show should be there for two seasons, because we never get the full range of who they are until after that second season. But with Anna Marie, I think I would be willing to make an exception and just get her out of there.
Sure. Yeah, I'm with you. She's kind of giving me like Diana Jenkins treatment. One and done. Don't need you. You're not affecting the show in a big way. Let's give your spot.
What do you think about Monica Garcia? You know, you had this brilliant comment of, I think you were the one that originally said Monica Garcia, potentially the most successful one and done housewife.
Most impactful one and done housewife. Yeah.
And I thought, and if you compare, I talked about this on the show, if you compare Monica and Anne Marie, you know, both potential one season housewives, man, Monica going out in a blaze of glory that we'll talk about her for decades to come. Yeah. Anne Marie is just so like, this is not the way to do it. This is not the way to go. And by the way, it's reality. So you're throwing your hat into the ring, and you really don't have guidelines or a way to go, but this just isn't working.
Yeah. And it's interesting because she had Kyle as her friend that brought her in, but I think that Kyle was kind of maybe just too wrapped up in her own stuff to kind of provide her that bridge that she maybe needed. I don't know. I just don't think she was ever going to work.
Well, these are such tertiary relationships where they're like so threaded. Like they're just thin thread of a relationship. You know?
Yeah, totally. All right. Let's switch gears to Salt Lake. We had the part two of the reunion this week. The finale was such a high. It was such a perfect moment that we got out of this show. And the reunion so far to me has been good, but it's just so hard to live up to that standard. And the finale was so like produced, and we had all these moments, and now it just feels like a lot of screaming. And I have a high tolerance for that. Obviously we're Housewives fans, but there's something about it that's not fully hitting for me yet. And maybe we haven't gotten to Reality Von Teese, but how are you feeling about the reunion two parts in?
Well, I mean, you said it exactly. We end on this high note of receipts, proof, timeline, all of this stuff, you know, the phrasing that captured the hearts and souls of a nation. Oh. And then we go in and we let the air out of the bag. You know, we're all pumped up. We're primed. We're like, you know, enraged. We're all of this stuff. And then you kind of like let that air out. And that's why I was like, almost like, man, if they were going to wait for the third episode to do the Reality Von Teese stuff, air back-to-back nights. Like, let's get it all out there, because I think we are then on the edge of our seats anticipating the information that is yet to come. So if you had the Reality Von Teese stuff not a part of this, so far, great reunion. If you looked, okay,
totally.
We got fights between Lisa and, you know, like all of these different things. you know, you have Mary coming out, but at the same time, we're all just thinking about reality Bontees. Even Heather pulling out audio clips, and obviously Lisa Barlow going, pull out the audio, Heather, do it. Like, so obviously Lisa knows every piece of audio that Heather has. So they've met before. And by the way, those are the things that I feel like robbed from the reality show audience of, like, show us those meetings. Show us the planning meetings.
Show us the backstage in the glam room. Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, when those talk are about the things.
And also, Andy has a really tough job of then having to explain more about Tanisha, Monica's ex-best friend that works for Heather that gave the audio. Like, the other thing that's brilliant about the Bravo audience is that, you know, we're so far ahead of this reunion in terms of all of our receipts, proof, and timeline, that that's the thing. Like, I begged Bravo in my first recap of this was, do a fourth episode of all the crap that's happened in the last month since you filmed this reunion, because there has been so much, just so we're not like at a loss, you know, of where we're at and what's going to happen. And are we going to vote Monica off the island at the end of the third part of the reunion? So there's so many unanswered questions, but I think it's like consistently edging us as an audience where we're like, we're almost there. We're almost there. We're almost there. And we just want to get there. Like, let's go.
I know. And it is a hard job because I interviewed Alexia 2 days ago from Miami, and they were filming the reunion today as we record this. And she was talking about, like, you know, she gets excited for the reunions, but there's a lot of, it's not just fighting your own fight. It's also like, you have to kind of do the work to fill in the audience that doesn't pay as much attention to, like, the social media stuff. And they just kind of watch the shows, you know? So, like, and on this show, it's like, that is a really tough job to be filling the viewer in on all these receipts, proof, timeline, and screenshots. Well, like, it's a lot.
Though, and Gibson, that's what I always think about. Like, I've always pitched this idea, and, like, you know, like, you, I would, like, you, Dylan, Sarah, all these people, like, there needs to be Bravo Action News one time a week where we catch everybody up, like a best week ever, where we have commenters of, like, this happened in social media between Alexia and Marisol. And then you go to Gibson for a comment. You go, like, because I think there is something to be said of, even though I have this delusion that everybody is so plugged in, the reality of that situation is that they're not. And we do need to catch up the audience at a certain point of, like, this is moving so fast. And Bravo is starting to do a really good job of capturing that wave. But at the same time, I feel like we have so much further to go because we don't want social media to surpass the actual content.
No, exactly. Exactly. And it's an incredibly tough balance. They're doing a better job at it. It's just like,
it's so hard. Yeah. It's so much.
Especially with this show, which is so just like, it's such like a postmodern Housewives. I'm just like, well, it's like on steroids, you know?
I mean, my thing at the end of the day too, is that I think right after that third episode, we're going to get that announcement that Monica will not come back to the show, or possibly she will. But my thought is that she probably, they're waiting for that third episode to release, and then we'll get that statement afterwards, because they can't make it now, because that also dissipates the tension and the excitement. But that's the thing. It's like, I just want this third part to air, so not only we can get on with our lives, but we can just kind of fill in the blanks of this story.
100%. And I think that I'm on the same page of, I don't think Monica's coming back, but I think that, you know, she had done herself no favors with the energy she's brought into this reunion. I think that she could have come in, you know, this is not her personality, but she could have come in a little bit more tail between her legs, a little bit more demure, a little bit more apologetic, owning a little bit more of it. And maybe we'll see that in part three. But so far, it's just like a little bit too combative and a little bit too fiery for them to want to give her a chance and to, like, meet her
close halfway. I do these line by line recaps, like they're like plays. And my thing was, every line with Monica will usually be like, bitch, you didn't know this. And I'm like, Monica, if you cut out that bitch, your line here actually makes sense and it gives us context. But the bitch throws everybody on that stage off. It throws the audience off. And I'm not trying to be an old fuddy-duddy, even though I am.
No, but
it's that thing of presenting the information. You have to play the game a little bit. And when her and Lisa get into that back and forth screaming, like, you know, deaf comedy jam, like, argument where they're just hurling curse words, which is so exciting to hear on Peacock. It's like the same note again and again, where it doesn't do herself any favors. I'm still of the mind, and I think we're in disagreement here, is that, listen, none of those ladies on that stage, nor Housewives in general, nobody's above reproach. They've all done really bad things. This is actually weirdly bad in a new, different way, but nobody on there is angels. And I also think it would be interesting to see her back, just to watch her face more of that music, to see where those cards lay. And, like, the reunion has done a good job, just like with Kyle, where we're presenting the context of her mom, obviously, her dad leaving, her marriage, her assault, all of these things kind of lead up to how she speaks and why she speaks the way she does, why she is so combative, and then why she probably eventually chose to go the wrong route and to try to take down somebody that she felt was getting more than her. And then, I don't know, that part, I think.
No, that's very valid. That's very valid. It's like, I would love to see what happens next in this whole situation. I really would. I'm just worried about like the, not the precedent, just sort of like the slippery slope that it would represent in bringing her back in terms of like a fan page made it onto the show, lost the trust of all of her castmates. And I think that if production decides to bring Monica back, I wonder if the other women lose a little bit of trust in production. In some, I don't know. That's
well,
total
and you've talked to Housewives as well. Is that like, they already are, sometimes they're, you know, it's not like everybody thinks they're already confused if producers even like them, if they're doing a good job. So they're already in this insecure space. So that's, but I still am wondering what the reality of Auntie's account, like they're like, we've stayed up nights worrying about this account. And I remember that account with the Jen Shah stuff, but I'm still a little confused and murky. And even last night when
what
Heather's
they said about the other women.
Heather's playing that clip about supposedly Mary, it sounds like to me, Monica is talking about this person said something about Mary and I want to DM Mary that they said this. And that's why I was like kind of pleading with the audience of like thinking about context. You can cherry pick clips and really make anybody look very bad. And the thing with Monica, the other, sorry to overtalk here, Gibson.
I want this.
The way she's cursing, it takes away from that argument because there's a good chance if she had chilled out, she could almost become a martyr in a sense, because you could make the argument that all of these ladies are now doing exactly what these six people in Reality Von Teese did, plotting against somebody else's downfall. And if they let Heather hang herself a little bit more, you would see that I think Heather knew a little bit earlier than she actually said. She was in possession of this audio a little bit earlier than she. You could make the argument that Heather got obsessed at one point. And Heather, by the way, Heather and Whitney, huge fans of Housewives before Salt Lake City. They know how this game works. Heather, weirdly enough, is the reliable narrator on this show, like Crystal. It's just that Heather actually kind of vacillates between really liking being popular and then also realizing that it might not be everything that she had always wanted it to be. And that's fascinating.
You just spit out a lot of really good theories and a lot of really good.
Sorry, I'm second.
I agree about Heather. I think that Heather is the voice of the audience, but I think that Heather's kind of Achilles heel is wanting to be liked and worrying about that too much. And that's not something that I actually don't think Crystal thinks about that very often for herself. I don't think she cares. And I think that that is what separates them. I think that that's kind of what got in Heather's way at so many times in the past, like with Jen and stuff, and worrying about how it all came across. And I think that's why this season has been such a redemption season for her in my eyes, in terms of like that black eye stuff. People were fed the fuck up with that. Like they were over it with Heather and that they were so done her allegiance to Jen. And then she came into the season at a low, and she kind of, I think it's impressive how she built up to this moment. And if she knew earlier, I could absolutely see that. But I'm still very happy with her, the way that she handled this and released this information, showing that she is like stepping into her power, recognizing that she has this elevated position on the show. I at least she's sort of reading that. You're right.
I mean, she rules Salt Lake. She is, you know, next season, she will be the number one housewife in Salt Lake City.
I totally agree. And it's interesting because then it's like I compare the core four of Salt Lake, who are through four seasons, with the where the core four on Potomac have gotten us, which is to a not great season. It's sort of like how long, I'm just so curious how these two sort of runs of the core four OGs sort of how they compare to one another at the end of the day, because they're only halfway to where Potomac got, and Potomac got through eight seasons with four OGs. I think it's incredibly impressive, but like, how long can the Salt Lake City women keep this up of like juggling the new dynamics and keeping it fresh and interesting and whatever? Because the Potomac women did it for a very long time, and I think this is the first time that it's sort of not working for them. But the Salt Lake women, maybe they have it in them.
And in what reality, and you can pull Vanderpump Rules into this, is if we're looking at this as actual real life, some people just aren't meant to be friends at a certain point. Like, guess what? When you're a bartender and a bar back, you're not meant to be friends for the rest of your lives. It's usually those people you had a good time with, some
it's
crazy
a bonding
times.
Moment. Yeah.
And it's the same thing. Like, you know, Candace is not going to ever get over, like, I mean, like it's really wild and kind of real, but at the same time disappointing, because you want them to get back to those good times where they work together as the Avengers. And it is so, And more than that, it just, you know, the audience is now being fed so much good TV that we can tell almost immediately when it's not, you're not feeling it. And I'm always of the, like, you never, no show left behind. You never give up on a show. You watch
agree. I will never give up.
Yeah, that's never going to be an issue for me, and I hope not for other people. But we do know when there's better seasons and not. With Heather, though, back to her last night, she talked about, or Tuesday night, she talked about, you know, the mom. She knew going on to this show, it would have the relationship with her mom continue to be very, like, here and there. And that's the thing with Heather. That's what I always think of. Like, is it, has it been worth it? Has this dream of choosing the book and talking about the religion and TV, has it been worth losing some of those relationships, some of those familial relationships? Is it all it's cracked up to be? It's all, is it all you dreamed it to be? Because I read her book and, she says Andy Cohen's her God at one point.
Wow.
And that's the thing I always want to know. Has it been worth it at the end of the day? Mm.
It's a really good question. Bad Mormon too. She has to answer that question.
Electric Boogaloo. You know? Yeah, let's go. I mean, you know, it's happening. It's happening.
Yeah.
By the way, you would do a great interview with Heather. Have you gotten, you got to get Heather on.
I did her at my old, on my old show, I think for last season, maybe. She's a good interview. Yeah, she's a really good interview, but I haven't read her book. So maybe I should read the book first. I feel like that's one of her first questions for people these days, is if you read her book. but I love Heather. I'm really happy that she kind of has gotten to a place where she feels really powerful and is sort of like, you know, lifted up by that. So we talked about Monica and, you know, whether or not she could work coming back to the show, whether or not it will happen. And I said that I want to talk about this. You posted that Real Housewives franchises should be able to trade housewives to different franchises like sports teams do.
Yeah.
Was Monica in mind when you tweeted that? Did you have somebody in mind when you tweeted that?
I've been doing this show for 4 years. This like idea was on my second episode. I've always thought, I've not been a big sports person, but what I find fascinating about sports is that element of being able to trade people, being able to think of it as teams. And sometimes when you think of something like Potomac, well, like, hey, maybe this is a time where we actually really just do a crazy experiment, because you think about other, like you think about OC with like Tamra, like nobody seems to really be able to like punch Tamra's clock in the sense of like really pin her down and go, hey, you exhibit the same behavior in every season, yet nobody really is able to call you out on it. Okay, well, why don't we take, why don't we take Giselle, or why don't we take somebody from Zoe and put him over in OC as a foil to this person if we're not getting that casting? It's an impossible idea, but it's something that's so exciting to think about. Because, you know, if they're going to do Ultimate Girls Trip, that's fine. But you're like sending them off to a different location. Let's see how they do. Like, let's see if we can get Atlanta. Like, you know, we send Erica Jane to Atlanta. Like, is she going to do Kim Zolciak? Is she going to get in there? Or is she going to be completely stomped and go, girl, what are you even doing? Because I think sometimes they get in a rut being in their own iteration location.
Totally. I agree.
You know?
And it's almost like you want Erica to be able to do a 3-episode arc on Atlanta. Or you want, Candace to do a 3-episode arc on OC and just see what she can twist up. You know, it's a great idea. It really is.
I mean, it would be so hard in like, it obviously it's too hard to do, and they're already just trying to get these shows made. But man, I was
one
so happy
dream.
When they started doing that, like we're all under the same umbrella where Winter House existed and Girls Trip, because you know, it's such good IP, such good intellectual property, is that don't screw up the shared universe. You know, the Bravo cinematic universe is just as valid as the Marvel one.
Yeah. So, okay, let's say next season of Salt Lake, Monica's not coming back, but we still want her on our TVs. Where do you place her?
You know, I got to tell you, Monica, okay, so to Monica, I think, like OC did actually pretty good last season, but I think it's got so much further to go. I think Monica actually would be a really interesting person to put in with those OC ladies, and somebody that would actually kind of fight in a different way. Now, obviously you could put her into Atlanta and see if she could hold her own with some of those ladies, some people that almost kind of fight a little bit more like her. But I would actually, I don't know, for some reason, I'm really hoping, like I felt like OC had a really solid foundation from which to launch again last season, but it needs to go somewhere. And I'm worried, you know, it's the same people. We need something to come in and shake something up. And maybe Monica would be good over there. What do you think?
I could see that, because Noella sort of had that sort of quality that was a little bit more reckless in her words and like just kind of said whatever, but she didn't quite work there. But maybe Monica could hang in a different way, I think, because she has the X factor that I don't think Noella ever had.
Yeah, would Monica have a scene crying by a river like Noella? Scream! Ah!
No. Where could Monica work? I mean, I think Monica could work on, honestly, most of them.
I mean, to honestly, be honest. Oh, also throw her into Vanderpump Rules.
Totally. Put her, yeah, you know? Totally. Put her in the summer house, you know? Like,
oh my God, yes.
I could see her in I could see her, you know, sparring with Margaret Josephs in Jersey. I could see her sparring with Kenya in Atlanta. I could see her going at it with Candace. She has a lot of potential. So,
well, it's
maybe
also
it's
a great way to break
table.
Up.
I don't know.
You just brought up Jersey. I forgot, like, to break up those old fights that we see season after season. Like, let's send Melissa or Teresa somewhere else. Like, obviously, we're not going to get anywhere with this relationship ever. And for us to think otherwise, we're completely idiotic. So let's get them off and get them somewhere where they can succeed, you know, solo.
Totally. Well, Ryan, we're blessed by the Bravo gods right now. It's quite a time to be doing what we do, but I really appreciate you taking the time. And
oh my God,
schedule.
I was so excited for you to ask. And wait, I just thought Bravo needs to do an hour where it's just called nap time and they just air a black screen that we can sleep during.
Like, we sleep to the soothing sounds of Heather's monologues on the show.
give us a permission to sleep. Like, nap time with Bravo would be a great show. I think it would be highly
listen
watched.
I'd love it. Tell everyone where they can listen to your podcast, follow you, all the things.
So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey. We just moved over to Betches like 3 months ago. They're awesome. You can follow So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey on Instagram. We got a YouTube channel. You can find all the stuff on the Instagram, but there is so much content. So just pick and choose what you like. We had Mark Paul Gosselaar on this week and Shanola Hampton from the NBC show Found, which I dug. We have Francesca Farrago coming up soon, the actor Brian Greenberg. We got we had Toya and Dr. Simone from Married to Medicine. So it's
great
really
guests.
It's just really a blend of guests, but there's also just really silly recaps if you want to have a chuckle. Just check in with what you like and see if you like it. But if not, just listen to any podcast. And also make sure you hit the 5-star button on Gibson's podcast and rate and review this, because that is so important, especially for a new podcast, people. It's just a real click hit with your thumb and that's all you have to do. But we want more good podcasts like this. It helps the overall industry and it helps everything that we love.
Oh, you're the best, Ryan. Doing my plugs for me. I love it. Thank
no,
you so
it's
much.
Important. Yeah.
Yeah. You're really the best. And we'll talk again soon. There'll be more to talk about in tomorrow.
Anytime.
So.
Anytime, man. And whenever you want to come back on, let me know.
I'm down. All right. Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks, dude.
Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes. And subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gibsonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and keep up with all things Gabbing with Gabe at Gabbing with Gabe on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gabe is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.